Welcome back into another episode of Dapped on Draft Podcast. I am your co-host, Corey Kennan, and today Dalton Miller is not joining us again. Dalton is enjoying a nice trip to Porto with his family in Portugal over there. So I lined up a guest for you all today, and I got to tell you, it's a pretty exciting guest and a pretty exciting episode. I got Yahoo Sports' Nate Tice to join the episode and break down some 2026 quarterbacks. Again, Nate has already done quite a bit of work on these quarterbacks as well, as have I. If you are a subscriber to the Substack, if you are not a subscriber to the Substack, I would recommend that you do that. I've dropped a film room on Fernando Mendoza. I've done a live charting of Mendoza against NC State. I've done a two-hour video inside the film room on every single Arch Manning dropback as well. And I've even dropped a weighted on target percentage profile on Lenora Sellers in addition to having 10 weighted on target percentage profiles already up in the Google Drive. And so to get access to that, you do need to be a subscriber to daftondraft.football, my Substack there. So I recommend that you do that. But today, Nate and I are going to break down this 2026 class and give a little bit of a primer of our thoughts, you know, just brief elevator pitches for 10 of these quarterbacks. And so it's a very exciting episode. So please, please, please tune into that. Take notes. It was an awesome conversation. So let's go to that now. All right. So as promised, the honorable Nate Tice from Yahoo Sports has joined the Dapped on Draft podcast. Nate, not much of an introduction needed. Your body of work has spoken for itself from The Athletic to Yahoo Sports. Thank you so much for joining the Dapped on Draft podcast here.
I'm fired up. No, thanks for having me. Honorable. I'll take that. As someone who's really into board games, I always try to play honorably. And that sometimes is to my detriment, because I expect everybody to live by the golden rule. So I'll take that. I really appreciate it. No, great to be here.
So you must have been geeked then with the Gray Zabel Settlers of Catan thing then.
And I'm trying to get more and more athletes. So like more football players too, and basketball players, I'll include them, have that little nerd side to them than they let on. And board games is actually an itch that actually scratches a lot of it because it's competitive. You can kind of work on it. You know, you can bet on it as well. But I want to get that world of football board gamers just graduate from Catan like I did 10 years ago. Get into even Carcassonne. You know, that's the next step maybe. I got 40 other games I could recommend. But, you know, I'm on the outside right now, so they're probably not going to listen to me. But it's like, let's just graduate. Catan's met its limit. Let's graduate from there like everybody else does.
I love it. I love it. The Guardians, by the way, have a chess club. I don't know if you know that, but that's a fun thing to take a peek into there. But
yeah,
but Nate is here.
You're a Guardians fan too. Yeah, Cleveland.
I am. I'm a Cleveland guy.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. I the late 90s. I'm a Mariners fan. Really,
well,
really
those, made me those Cleveland baseball Mariners series, man.
Oh, battles! Yeah. I know. Me and Dane Brugler talk about it all the time. Like love both it. Of our childhoods, watching those games. The different sides. He likes them a lot. Like those games a lot more than I did.
yeah. Understandably so. But yeah, the Arthur Rhodes arm of a scale dispute. Some things like we can really get into some of that. But
yeah.
We are here to talk about some 2026 quarterbacks. Again. Anybody who subscribes to the Substack has seen, I tried to get a little bit ahead. I've got like 10 full profiles, charting profiles up, and I've done a film room on Fernando Mendoza versus NC State. I wrote a whole article on Fernando Mendoza. I dropped a two-hour video on every Arch Manning dropback yesterday. So, but I found that Nate has also gotten ahead of the schedule a little bit here, dropped his early big board for Yahoo, and I said, well, who better than the guy who played college quarterback himself to try to get on the podcast. So, Nate, thank you so much for doing this, and let's start at the top. We talked a little bit off air, and I thought I was getting ahead. I was like, I'm dropping this the Monday after the draft. I have to drop it the Monday after the draft because I don't want anybody else to like. And so I did. And then like some of the comments were like, yeah, I'm so sure a quarterback from Indiana is great, blah, 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 blah. And then like 2 days later, it's like, oh, well, Nate has him QB1 too. I feel really good about this.
I know. And I filed it on that. So it must have been Monday afternoon. I filed it. So because they wanted the list, they do the graphics team, which, you know, I'll take a shot at the graphics team. They messed up one of the players anyway, so why am I getting this in early for you guys? But we talked about it off air, and Fernando was on my list, and I kind of took a liking to him throughout last year. But once I started the studying process, which is usually just two, maybe three games, because I got a life. Right. And also because I want to wait until, you know, this is just more prep work. And it ended up being 5-6 games on Fernando Mendoza because it was just so much fun. But yeah, we'll talk more about him. But it was just I'm very excited about this quarterback class. Is it the greatest I've ever seen? Maybe not, but there's some really interesting dudes, and Mendoza is one of them.
Yeah, this quarterback class is going to come down to the 20-year-olds with like big time tools. If those guys take a leap, then like we're going to have a lot of fun with this quarterback class. But
yeah,
but starting with Mendoza, then, because again, both of our QB1s at this point in the summer, spring, I guess you could even say, I was blown away by, because like again, Cam Ward does some cool stuff pre snap, and obviously he knows what he's looking at post snap, but again, in the crystal ball offense, like pretty heavily air raid, he wasn't tasked with a lot of pre-snap responsibilities.
Right.
None of these quarterbacks this past class really were. What I was blown away was just how quickly Mendoza was picking things up pre-snap, how quickly his eyes were reactive post-snap. That NC State game, I've broken it down like all over on my Substack. I think I even posted on that clip on Twitter, but like there's a play side screen to the trip side and a backside alert post. And he like recognizes this as zero. I'm just flipping my hips and throwing the post. Like stuff like that is what blows me away with Mendoza, on top of the silly arm talent. I mean, he can drive the ball like crazy. And then he's a pretty, I'd say probably like a high 4.6, low 4.7 athlete with the ball in his hand too. Like,
yep. Probably whatever Shuck ran this past year, probably very similar to that kind of running style.
Pretty creative off platform, pretty good stuff. Mm-hmm. What was it that drew you to Fernando Mendoza when you were working through those 5-6 games?
Yeah, when I first watch a guy, I want to see, well, first off, tools. So I'm like, all right, height, weight, okay, check, we're good there. You know, a little skinny, but we can work with that. But it's watching him, how do you win from the pocket? And all right, so I watch you, how do you operate from the pocket? I'm glad you brought up the pre-snap stuff too, because his awareness, I'm hoping a Cal quarterback has some intelligence to him. So I was, you don't want to assume every time, but I was assuming that he'd be okay. And you're exactly right. I thought what really stood out to me was there's interceptions on his record. He doesn't make mental mistakes, at least consistently so. And actually, and these are some of the things, as you know, as you're charting, but as the stuff kind of washes over you and you start watching 2, 3, 4, 5 games, those mistakes or the bad plays really start sticking out. Oh, this happened because of this. This happened because of this. Okay, that's a theme to your bad plays. Mendoza's bad plays was like, okay, I threw an interception against a robber, but guess what? That's where the read took me. And I could see why he threw that ball, because, okay, I got to get it out, but the robber got me. They caught me there. But it wasn't a panicked decision. There was process to the bad decision, but the process was sound. How he got there, the result ended up being not great, but I understood why he got there. So watching him win from the pocket, I was like, oh, okay. And then, like you say, the arm talent, how he operated on third and fourth down.
Yes.
That's what really stood out to me. And that speaks to what you're talking about, the awareness and the pre-snap stuff. Him against Pitt on third down and fourth down, it was so much fun to watch a college quarterback running real deal drop back concepts. I'm like third and 15, third and 12, third and 9.
That Pitt game, a third and 15, he's got a laser. Just
laser glance route or a dig, you know, or a post, like a skinny post, right? Yeah. Oh my God. Against the blitz. And he's diagnosing the cover zeros. He throws hot a couple times in that game where they ran like a true sight adjust. And that shows awareness where he knows where the blitz is coming from. So I was like, okay, you can win from the pocket. I think, like you said, he's a good enough athlete. Really, the guy that comes to mind when I watch him is Matt Ryan, because he's so long and skinny. Matt had a little, and they kind of, I wouldn't say it's an elongated motion, but they have long levers, they have long arms, so it's just gonna look longer, but he's so quick twitched that it just gets out quick. Like Matt Ryan was a third baseman, like an all-state third baseman, so hot corner, getting the ball out and quick. I think Mendoza has that same quality, even though he's longer. So like when I was watching those plays, that's what stood out. And then you get into that trades, the athleticism stuff, and like you said, he has some creativity throwing off platform. He's tough as hell. Like this guy's a warrior all the way, which also, that's another comparison to Matt Ryan as well. But the last thing too is speaking to like the awareness and just, I had this game, I originally watched it TV copy and then all 22 on the TV copy. It's the end of the Wake Forest game. And they're in a 4-minute drill, meaning burning out the clock, milking the clock. And he runs for a first down on like a zone read. And this sequence is also really weird because I went back to watch, I have every game on TV from college football saved on my YouTube TV. So I'm going back and watching, and there's like a cutout after this play happened. So I still don't know what happened, but he gets the first down. He gets up and just, he goes down. Like he doesn't run for a touchdown. He just goes down after he gets the first down, and he looks at the coaches like, victory. Like we're taking a knee. We're under 2 minutes. They only have two. They only have one, two timeouts. Like, victory. The Cal coaches run the ball with him after, even though the quarterback was correct. They could have just taken a knee and iced the game. They end up scoring and they're fine and everything. But that just stood out to me. I was like, this redshirt sophomore knows clock management better than his Cal coaches. And I know it's a little thing, but if this guy ends up having a great year, I'm going to be telling that story 100 times this next year.
Yeah.
Because those little things, I know it's just little things I'm extrapolating, but that just showed, like, this guy gets ball. Like, this guy has a football IQ. So it's just, yeah, that's what stands out to me. This guy is a supreme pocket operator.
Yeah. Again, a kid who was committed to Yale before Cal came along late too. So, like,
I know you told me that. I was like, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Makes a ton of sense. So, like, just a brilliant, brilliant kid. So I'm glad I'm not alone on my mountain, my Fernando Mendoza mountain. That's probably a good healthy amount of Fernando Mendoza discourse. We have
the Indiana offense will be fun too. So we'll just keep
we should, how yeah, good we this should talk be.
I also why we want to get in early on this because I think by the time October hits, everyone's go for why is Fernando Mendoza's got 18 touchdowns through 5 weeks? Like, who is this guy? Like, I'm excited in that off. Did you hear him interview about that too? Why you went to Indiana?
Well, I think his brother's the backup quarterback there, so I know his parents have a good relationship with Cignetti. Yeah.
That helps. So he actually said, and this was really cool. It was, you know, it was Indiana YouTube or whatever. I don't know how I came across it. I probably searched his name or something. And he was talking about, and they were like, oh, why'd you pick Indiana? You know, some kids will always say, like, oh, the environment and, like, the fans and all that. And he goes, development. I want to go with these coaches because they coach this guy in the NFL, this guy in the NFL, and this guy in the NFL. And the only guy that he hasn't coached that's not in the NFL is Curtis Rourke. And he's like, have you guys watched Curtis Rourke? He's a badass. I was like, that's such a good answer. I'm like, check. Yeah. But I was like, but again, once people go, why do you go to Indiana? I already had someone text me and goes, well, he's at Indiana. Who cares? Why didn't he go to a big school? It's like, he could have. Just that there was a reason he went to Indiana. And I was like, yeah, he's checking a lot of boxes for me. So I'm very excited to watch this year.
Again, Georgia, Miami were both very, and he's from Miami. Like, he could have just gone to Miami. And
Mario Cristobal is Cuban American too. Like, I mean, that should be an easy connection for him.
right. All right. We'll move on to, let's move on to Arch Manning. Again, this is pretty fresh on my mind because I just did that 100 drop back breakdown or whatever it was, that 2-hour video. You also dropped an article on Arch. For me, the tools are so evident. Again, this is for me, like, I'm from Ohio. So I watched a lot of Terrell Pryor growing up where it's like, you watch Terrell Pryor run, you're like, that guy's not that fast. But then you look at how long his legs are, and it's like, oh, that guy's running a 4.4.
And everybody was pulling away from everybody.
and like on some of those zone reads with Arch, I kind of felt the same way. It's like, he doesn't look like that. He's that fast. But he's like, no, this guy's probably like a 4.58, 4.55 athlete. He's just like 6.4, and he's got long strides. So like the tools are so evident. Yeah. I'm interested to talk through some of what you thought of his like kind of pre-snap, like, eyes versus post-snap reaction to what he saw, because I think I saw a little bit of breakdown there, but again, he wasn't the established starter. He wasn't game planning necessarily every week as the established starter. So I'm really interested to see how that develops now that he's been the established starter since January, kind of how that like a lot. In a lot of situations he's coming in, they're up big or they're playing ULM or Mississippi State. So like, obviously Sark isn't opening up the playbook in situations where Arch is playing football last year in 2024, but there were like, they spam post dig a lot. They spam post dig a lot with him. And there are a lot of times it's like
two man play actions in there.
Yes. Yeah. Why are you throwing the post when the single high is not like it's when all, he's carrying the, some of those things are wired, like just throw the dig. Why didn't you throw this? But other than that, man, I thought a lot of the stuff was really good. Some of the placement accuracy stuff could be better, but really interested to see how that takes a step forward now that he's got full hold of the reins.
Yeah, it's one of those where I came in, I wouldn't say I was a hater, but I was like really trying to come in and going like, hey, what's all right? You know, like, let's keep the hype low, which is watch this guy how you'd watch this guy. And it's one of those I concluded my article. And I really don't think, and this is what I've heard through the grapevine again, like, it's a lot of talk in May, like, we'll see when November rolls around or October, is that he'll be returning to school no matter what happens. But that's just what I hear. Things change. So that's why I kept him off my big board. But like, when I watched him, it was like, oh, I'm buying the hype. I am, because like you said, the tools are very good to excellent. He doesn't have a elite arm, but he has a very good arm. And I also think, like you said, he's a very good athlete. He's very much his father's son, Cooper, who is a receiver. And he's very much Arch's grandson or Archie's grandson. Like, he's very much got those genes. And I think he got a little bit of Eli's brain. And I mean that in a good and bad way, because like what you're saying is he has no, and this is why I end up liking him, is he has no fear in chucking the alert, chucking that deep ball and putting on the money too, like that. And watching Quinn and then watching him, it's like, oh God, how I, man, the politics must have been insane.
Must have been.
I cannot wait down the road to hear what unfolds, because it's like, how are you playing that guy over this guy? I don't get it. But Arch, I would say, I'll start with some negatives. Is you could see some of the inexperience, mm-hmm. where I would say it was UTSA. He gets caught against a zone blitz. They're running a choice concept, and on the zone blitz, the DN drops off, or the outside linebacker drops, and like classic fire zone. And he panics. You could tell he freezes. He's like, oh, I don't know what to do here. And then what was cool, though, they run the same play again, get the same look, and then he finds the read, hits the ball, hits a choice route, goes for like a 15-20 yard gain. It's like, okay, those are the encouraging signs. If he got it twice and he made the same mistake twice, yeah, it's inexperienced, but also like, I want my dudes to show that they can learn. Right. You know, you kind of want to see it, and it helps you kind of project these guys. So it was all these mistakes that he did make. I thought sometimes he would maybe be a little robotic with his reads and go like, okay, I'm not comfortable with this game, this concept. So I'm going, it wasn't post dig or post over. Mm-hmm. All right, 1-2-3. And it could kind of make him a little late, make him feel a little bit late. But what was so cool with him is throughout the games, you could see it just tighten, tighten, tighten quick. The second half against Mississippi State was excellent. Dude. Excellent. Shows every type of throw, shows pocket movement, shows athleticism, shows everything that you want to see. And that's really where I was like, okay, yeah, I'm buying this hype. And I said this in my article, was that, you know, yes, he's going against UTSA, like you said, Louisiana Monroe and Mississippi State, who are 92nd, 95th, and 110th in defensive rating, FEI defensive ratings. I'm buying the hype because of just what I saw, and showing all the maturity, or I shouldn't say maturity, show the polish that he did show, pocket movement, consistent throwing style, throws a tight spiral every time. I'm willing to bet on him and Sark just really ascending this year. So I said this in an article, like if I was for sure that he was declaring this year, he would have been right there, right behind Mendoza for me. It would have been like Mendoza, probably Arch, but again, 90 something dropbacks or 90 something pass attempts this past year. It's just a little hard for me to just go, right, yep, you're a dude. But I am buying stock because I was really encouraged with what I saw.
It almost makes me want to go back and watch 2020 Mac Jones and see, like, was Mac Jones given any pre-snap responsibilities that just Sark did not trust Quinn with? And is that something that Arch could have? It almost makes me want to go back.
That Michigan game, right? Wasn't there a bowl game that he played when Tua sat out? Like he mm-hmm. played like a Mac played like that one bowl game where he started. So that's a great comparison though, too. Mm-hmm.
And I think Sark was still there, the offensive coordinator of the year. Mac Jones had the most efficient season in college football history too. So like,
right.
Are there, like, because Mac was clearly a master of that offense. So being a master of that offense, what more was Sark willing to give him than, say, he was willing to give Quinn? I do want to kind of check that out too. But there is quite a bit to like that Mississippi State game. I think so many guys, quarterbacks as well, is just like, in protection, just count how many guys are in the box versus how many guys you have in. And like sometimes the shortcomings that just trying to get the ball out, like snapped quickly and things like that, things fall through the cracks. And that Mississippi State game, he throws a slot fade against cover zero where it's like they bring 6-on-5 and he knows he's got the end man on the line of scrimmage and he just lets it and he it drops That's it on cool. a dime 38 yards down the field or something like that too. Just beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
All right, let's get a little bit to the best of the rest. We don't have to spend as much time on some of these guys, but I mean, they're talented dudes. So like Lenoris Sellers is another guy, and I think I would probably come in with him because I'm going to keep Arch in my back pocket too for now.
Okay.
I'd probably come in with Sellers at quarterback too as well. And I think what I like most about Sellers is he doesn't get enough credit for how good in structure he is. I think people want to say, well, he's just a good athlete. He's just a mobile quarterback. He just runs, like, I want to see him throw the football. There are a couple of things that irk me from within structure that he does, but I think he's trying really hard to stand in there. And I think he's with the right staff to develop him based. And I say that based on like the massive drifter that Spencer Rattler was when he came from Oklahoma versus the almost too robotic pocket passer he left as from South Carolina. And I know Dow Loggins isn't there anymore. He took the job at App State, but what irks me about Sellers is one, I don't see any anticipation throws. Like, I think he's a quarterback, and this might have been just a first year starter thing. And he did do an interview where he said, like, I want to trust my arm more. He's got a big arm, trust it. Cool. He wants every window to clear before he's throwing. And that is like, I just throw some into some windows, throw open some windows, throw open some guys rather than seeing them then throwing just a little more trust in his arm there. And then, like, I don't know if you noticed this as well, but like he's not a big climber. So he'll hit 5-7 drops and then he'll throw from 5-7 drop, like 5-7 yards deep. It's like, climb back up a little bit, keep yourself like, so those are two things, but I think he's got a really good foundation as a pocket passer, plus all of the other extraordinary things that he has physically in his frame.
Yeah, he's the most of this group, the most projection, which is so funny to say with Arch that has 90 something pass attempts, but yeah, it's 100, I think, in his career. But no, you're exactly right. I had him overall in my top 10, and it's more of like just bullish on one of the flashes you've seen. Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you. I thought his pocket work was actually, I was pleasantly surprised by it. The Clemson game is the one that stands out to me. But it was just a lot of, like, it's like, this is what you want to see as far as a baseline. He's always going to win by being a creator. Like, you can tell, like, you know, a leopard doesn't change their spots, whatever the line is. Like, they guys win in a certain way. So, like, that's always going to be his calling card. But like you said, like, how he throws from the pocket and what he's comfortable with. And another thing, too, is that he's a young guy for his grade. He's still 19 as we record this. He turns 20 next month. So that's another thing that's in my mind, too. It's not this is a guy that's taken some time. You know, it's going to be young. So there's a true first year starting. A big recruit, but wasn't a gigantic recruit either. Like, it wasn't like he was a good recruit, you know, but he wasn't like some super five star as well. So which also, you just look into that, maybe it's like, okay, maybe there's some projection more. This guy wasn't this polished five star guy coming from the Elite 11 camps and all that. Like, those are the things I try to always narratively scout as well. But as far as size, tools, I mean, top of the charts. It's what you dream of. And from by all accounts, supposed to be a great kid, hard worker. So like, that's why I stay bullish on him. But also the creation is just what stands out. Juking Peter Woods in the pocket, can not even just create where he just gets past the line of scrimmage. He turns a sack into an explosive, which is the ultimate game changer. A negative 10-yard loss turns into a 20-yard gain. Like, those add up over time. But like you said, it's just the flashes from the pocket are encouraging. It's not Malik Willis when he was coming out of Liberty, where it was like, yeah, he's got a great arm, but the dude has never met a pocket that he wants to stay in. Like, he just is drifting and trying to bail every time. And it was like, okay, that was a true project to me, like true overhaul project. While I watch Sellers, who I think has the same tools, probably better and bigger, but then has actually those flashes. Like, I'm standing here, I'm planning, I'm going to throw and rip this throw. And on top of that, he can make every type of throw. So it's more of a projection, but the thing is, the baseline's a little higher than maybe I even gave it credit for before I studied him. You got to watch the last month with him. Yeah. That was first month. I was like, okay, there's flashes here. But then I watched those last two or three games of the season. And I was like, okay, that's when I was like, originally he was my number one guy. And then I watched Mendoza and then I was like, oh, okay, never mind. Yeah. But I'm very, very bullish on him. Like, I just think he has the nice baseline, but the high end ceiling is just going to be ridiculous.
I think the only box, like, as an NFL prospect to check for me is like, can you just throw some anticipation? Like, because he has the longest time to throw in the country, and that's always going to be a little elongated for mobile quarterbacks who create outside of structure. Mm-hmm. But like, there's clearly a part of it that is because he's holding the ball a tick longer, waiting for windows to clear before. And that could be, again, a first year starter. I'm just trying to be safe with the football kind of thing. Do want to see some more big throws on his tape, but there's so much to love there. Another guy with a hose for an arm and probably another 4-5 athlete, Cade Klubnik, who you had him at 25 on your board. Yes. Cade, he's a roller coaster for me. Like, it's very much up and down. He does so many good things. Well, it's like, oh, your eyes are working really well. But then there's like always something in the back of his mind. It's like, I'm just looking for the excuse to do something like really reckless with the football.
Yes.
And I think I need him to. But another thing with Cade, and we talked about this with the young guys in this class a little bit already, is like, he started since he was a freshman, and you can very much see linear growth from a freshman to a sophomore a junior. Yep. And there's no reason to anticipate we won't see another linear growth here. But again, he's got a hose, an elastic arm, and he's ultra mobile. So there's a lot to buy into. Garrett Riley seemed to get a little bit more out of him last year in, as the offensive coordinator there too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, where are you at with Klubnik? I know he was 25 on your board.
Yeah.
What does a rise look like for Klubnik? What's the next step look like for Cade Klubnik for you then?
Just keep doing what he's doing. I mean, like you said, the ascension has been really cool. I really like, this sounds so weird. He was at a camp I went to when he was coming out of high school, when I was kind of just helping out. It was Rod Woodson's camp, and he was there. His coach was there, and he was there. And I was like, oh, this guy kid's the high school senior. Holy crap. Like, okay. All right. So I kind of like just kept an eye on him. Oh, he's going to Clemson. Okay. So when he started as a true freshman, I wasn't shocked, but then you could tell he was overwhelmed, and you could tell it wasn't strong enough because he wants to run a little bit. Like, you know, he looked like he needed a red shirt. And then, you know, the second year starting, I was like, okay, there's a little bit more, but this last year, especially another guy, I would say the second half of last year, you could really see the fat kind of cutting out of his decisions, which he needs to do, I think, because to win. Like, you know, again, he's not overwhelming size, but he's solid enough, and he's not an overwhelming athlete, but he's a good athlete. But like, I really like the decision making he had. He's got a little wild horse to him. But I do think, like, that, you know, he's got a little bit. And what you said, kind of like, oh, there'd be one drive where I'd be like, okay, like, you're battling with Garrett Nussmeier, to me, who we're going to talk about too. But then there'd be other times where I'm just like, oh man, you just ran that play. Why are you hesitating? Or why are you like, so he still has some of those blemishes, which he can't. Sellers can have blemishes this way. Klubnik can't, because that's how they have to win at the NFL. So maybe I ding him for that, because I just think all that fat has to get stripped out. And what's great, he has another year starting where we get to see that, another year in a great team. I think Clemson's going to win the national championship. That's my May prediction, because they just have so much talent, including Klubnik. So he is what I have him graded right now, kind of similar to where I had Penix and Nix, which was more of a second round grade, you know, and those guys get inflated. He ended up as 25. So you can kind of see that cutoff for me. You can kind of see where my grading cutoff happens, wherever the quarterbacks are. That's where you can start. So Garrett Nussmeier is the cutoff between my blue chip guys and everybody else. Like, you kind of see where the cutoffs always start. So like him, he's the cutoff to me to second round grades, I would call. But second round grades with an arrow pointing up, because he has enough tools. And I think just the polish has really worked, really gotten developed.
Love it. I love it. All right. Yeah. You mentioned, let's just move on to Nussmeier here.
Oh yeah.
This is, I think we see Nussmeier a little bit different. I want to look.
He's like, after Nussmeier. My own heart. So it's going to be a guy that I'm like, he's after my own heart. And I'll explain in a minute, but yeah.
I love quarterbacks who are creative in structure and want to throw from structure and like have really good pocket movement and the arm angle. Like CJ Stroud is my favorite, like my trophy quarterback. And so I love quarterbacks who want to win like him. And he can do a lot of really fun off-platform stuff. I think I've noticed a little bit the ball velocity tends to take a dip when he's trying to be a little off-platform.
Yep.
And then that second half of the Texas A&M game, I think was a symptom of something larger, where like, I've said it twice, like proactive versus reactive eyes. Like proactive, I think he's really good at understanding what he's seeing pre-snap. Mm-hmm. Texas State started throwing, or not Texas State, Texas A&M kind of threw the kitchen sink at him there with like sim pressure, rotating out safeties out of the, like from the front. And that's, he kind of crumbled in the second half of that Texas A&M game, trying to figure out what they were throwing at him, obviously. But again, like we're talking about with Sellers, not Arch, because it's technically his first year, but like Sellers, some of the other guys, younger guys will hit here later on. He was a first year starter at the end of the day, even though he was a redshirt junior, maybe even, he was still a first year starter. So some areas for room. Like he's a quarterback I really want to like, but I will say that Baylor game, that bowl game might have been, even including Cam Ward, Shador Sanders, the entire, like every quarterback that just got drafted might have been my favorite quarterback game of the 2024 season.
Funny. And that's one game I haven't watched with him, because I don't really watch bowls, like, because all the shit that goes on with
the opt outs and the
depends on the guy, unless I need to watch Mykel Williams finally play like 40 snaps against Florida State, you know, like, but so I kind of stay away. So that's I'm gonna have to watch that today, because that's one game I haven't watched with him. So but what you're saying with I'm with you on Nuss, and also like this is I'll start with a negative. I just mentioned Sellers age, just about to turn 20. Nuss will be 24 when he's drafted. Mm-hmm. And if you got to, and how his style to win is, he's a supreme pocket operator, an aggressive one. And again, like you said, this is why I say he's after my own heart. It's like, I wish I could play like this, because he has no conscience. Like, he just makes a mistake, doesn't matter. Next ball, he's ripping the next one. He just got
arm arrogance out the wazoo. Yeah.
Yeah. It just, he does not care. He's got like the same mind as like Geno Smith, you know, obviously different players, but that mindset, like, hey, no, this high wire act. Every throw is a high wire act. Every throw is, I'm going for an explosive play. Arch has a little bit of the same tendency as well, but Arch, I think, actually is cleaner already getting there sometimes. So Nuss to me is like going to maximize what you're drawing up for him, and he can creatively get there. The thing is with two is that he's going to be older. He also, traits wise, as far as size and everything, it's kind of average. Like, he is listed 6'2", 205. So maybe gets up to 210, 212. That to me is a little scary because, yes, he doesn't take a lot of sacks. That's another thing why I really like him. It kind of cropped up as the second half of the year. But it's like, he doesn't take a lot of sacks, but that's in the NFL, big bodies grabbing at you. It's just, yeah, it's a thing. And unless you are a freak that runs a 4.4, it's a thing. Like, I watched Derek Carr do it for 10 years. Like, just get pulled down the pocket. So that is a negative for me on him. But the thing is, these guys that just have brass balls, like, I'm just like, I'm going to like it. Like, I just love watching his style of play. So I think once his cycle ends, he'll end up almost where, like, I think he'll drop a little bit for me, but I still like him. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I think others will rise above him, or maybe, you know, create a tier difference, but I still will end up bullish on him as maybe a late first rounder type. Chad Pennington's the guy that comes to mind when, ooh, I watch him. But Chad was a little bigger, but that's the guy that doesn't take a lot of sacks, just has balls and just will try stuff, even if his arm isn't elite, and like, or before he hurt his shoulder. Yeah. But like, that's the guy that kind of reminds me of Garrett Nussmeier.
So you brought up the build, and I wasn't gonna bring it up, but how
it's real though. You have to bring this stuff up. Like, these are prospect profiles, so you have to bring it up.
And this is like why it makes me a little less bullish, to be honest. Like, body typing, he's kind of a similar body type to like Mac Jones,
yep,
which is, yep, just like a little more fluffy than a guy 6'1", 205 pounds should be. Like, and to me, like, I think that also screams like, well, how much room for body development do you, exactly, have and things like, yes, that? And so that, right, is the reason for me, you're to kind of push the pause button a little bit on Nussmeier, yep, too. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, again, we've seen some supreme pocket passers really make it who aren't extraordinary athletes. And again, he's got the arm angles. He's got the fun platforms. Yep. He's got... And even like, I think Chris Hilton being out most of the season hurt his deep ball accuracy. I think you saw a little improvement in his deep ball accuracy when Chris Hilton finally got back on the field too, for LSU.
Yep.
Also, going back to Klubnik, I didn't even mention his wide receivers just briefly here. Two of his three wide receivers that he predominantly threw to were true freshmen last year as well. Yep. So like, that matters too, talking about
Klubnik, yes, a little bit. It does.
Going in now, they're sophomores. And Antonio Williams, I think, is a true junior or redshirt junior now too.
Redshirt. He's drafted. Yeah. Yeah. So. Junior, so, in some way.
His wide receivers are growing up too with him, yeah, and I, yep, think that's a huge deal.
That's a great
point. But yeah, so like, Nuss is something I can't completely hit the red button on to, like,
yeah,
I'm out, but I can't completely hit the green button that I'm in either. I just kind of like, I'm kind of floating in the middle there, because there's some things that I love. One quarterback that people are mocking in the top five that I think I'm, my hand is on the red button for, though, yeah, is Drew Aller at Penn State. I want your opinion on this, actually, as a former quarterback. Do you think that quarterbacks are, because I've noticed it with like Will Levis, Drew Aller, a little bit with Anthony Richardson, the overly rotational throwers, do you think quarterbacks are being coached almost too overly rotational, where they can't control where the ball, because like, I see accuracy issues with all of those super rotational throwers that we fall in love with, because like, wow, look how fast these guys get the ball, mm-hmm, out. But it's like, yeah, but if they're not hitting the mark, do you think that the quarterback coaching is like a little too overly rotational these days?
Well, yeah, and because a lot of those, what you're, the guys getting taught to be overly rotational are built like Nussmeier, you know, with, mm-hmm, 6'2", and, you know, shorter arms and everything. When you got longer arms, more issues can happen. It's just levers. It's just physics. And so, yeah, when you have to do the, they don't need that to be as violent to throw that way, because we already have, I'm including myself, I'm 6'5" with long arms. We already have natural gifts that can create that torque. Like, I have this whip of an arm that I don't need all the torso and all the hips to unravel the rest of it. So that's what is something I could spend 4 hours talking about modern day QB coaching and how overcoached some of these kids are and like how less feel. And actually, it's why I end up bullish on a lot of guys that didn't play quarterback from 12 years old onwards, is because I just think that they haven't been, I don't know how much I can swear on this, but they haven't been, they haven't been completely fucked by these guys that are just overly coaching them and making them robotic. And so they're actually athletes that become quarterbacks. And that's something I look at narratively sometimes when I'm scouting these guys. But Aller to me is from that Ryan Mallett, Joe Flacco tier. Like, that is the spectrum of quarterback that he is exactly. And I think he's more like Mallett than Flacco. Same exact thing. Me and Mallett actually were same high school class and everything. And the dude could throw the ball through two walls, not even just one wall. But what wall was he hitting? You had no idea. And that was the same thing. He's taller than me. I think Mallett was 6'6", huge arm. But the thing was, he was taught to throw so violently, and he was throwing a 5-yard slant route and trying to take the guy's head off, that he learned no finesse and no touch or anything. And with Allard, and the thing is, once in a while, I mean, the throw I think he had against Oregon, I know people were really just going nuts about it. He had one that was off out of structure and everything. But the thing about him is that as soon as he gets moved off the launch point, he sucks. And I'm not even saying like average or below average.
It's bad. Terrible.
Mm-hmm. Bad. And I am fine saying that. I don't need charting. I need my eye test.
I have the charting, and I can tell.
I know that's what I mean. That's like guys I charted. I work with Matt Harmon all the time, and so many times I'm like, oh, this receiver did this, and this receiver did this, and I'm like, anecdotally, I don't know what the charting says, and he'll be like, yeah, that matches. And I'm like, okay, good, but with Allard, it's just as soon as he has to move one step, that his throws nosedive. It's always consistent. It's the same thing. He always throws it at a guy's feet. Guess what? If you're a dude that's been quarterback since 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, I don't want to see that. You better be able to move and throw the football. So even though he has tools and he has all these things, and he's also in a very, very, very
friendly,
heavily designed offense that makes it, and he's very robotic. Very, you can tell it's good. I'm like, not going to knock the coaches. They are not there to go, hey, I'm making you the number one pick. They're there to win football games. If I develop you, that's a nice, side thing. But oh my God, I watch him progress, and you could hear the coaching in his head go 1-2-2-3. Okay, throw. It's like he doesn't shortcut anything. And if he does have to shortcut anything, it's like, oh, hold on to your hat. So, yes, he has tools. He has size. He's not a terrible athlete. He's just not a good thrower when he moves off of it. It's just, it's still an idea more than anything. And by this point in time, I would like to see more than just an idea, especially how he's being sold right now. People are selling him like he's just this big arm. You have no idea where the ball is going. You have no idea how his processing is. So it's like, yeah, I'm bearish on him. Not saying he's awful, the worst thing I've ever seen, but a guy that like I'm keeping out of the first round conversation, really keeping out of the second round conversation. I view him right now as a round three graded guy. And that's really just more off the tools and traits.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I'm glad you brought the processing there, because outside of the occasional like 3-by-1 backside 9 ball he sees against like 1-on-1, there's no hot throws, which is shortcutting.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
There's nothing to really hang your hat on from a mental perspective. And what I also come back to is a lot of this stuff is like, what have you done for me lately? And honestly, his last few games were like, people were all about that Big Ten championship game, and I was like, there's not a lot.
Ultimately,
here. Not a lot of beat. Yeah,
I know.
And then the Notre Dame game might have been one of the worst showings of a quarterback that I have seen in recent, for a guy who was like considering maybe declaring after that game.
Right. Like, right. His stock was going like, oh my God, I was getting yelled at for keeping out of mocks. People were like, what? Oh, we're going top 10. You don't have, why are you? And I'm like, I know.
Yeah. Maybe for a really desperate franchise, but and I think another thing we come back to is like, he can extend and pick up chunks with his legs.
Yeah, he's not.
He is not an athlete,
right? Like, it's not how he wins.
I was on a live stream the other night, and I felt kind of bad for saying it, but like, he reminds me of the David Schwimmer voiced giraffe from Madagascar. Like when he's running, like just how goofy and uncoordinated he looks trying to run with the football. Like, and but again, this is year three. So he's not one of those first year starters either that we're like coming back to.
And a big
so he's kind of in his own basket.
He's went to all the camps, and that stuff matters to me too, because it's like I want to see growth from that. And it's like, you have what I consider day one issues, like stuff I would try to teach a high schooler how to fix, So like the fact that
his feet are a mess. His lower half is a mess.
They're a mess. And I know he's longer legged, and that's harder. And that also speaks to guys like Arch or Mendoza. They're long legged too. I mean, Mendoza's 6'5", Arch is 6'4".
His base is awesome. His feet are awesome.
Look how tight their feet are. Twitchy feet. And like, yeah, I'm jealous of how quickly they can do it. Like an hour moves more like me. And I don't mean that in a good way, So it's like, yeah, if a guy's in a first round, they should not have feet like me.
Yeah, for sure. Let's move. I just briefly want to hit on two other seniors. One that's getting a lot of hype that I have watched a few games. It's like, this guy stresses me out to watch play football. Just because I feel like he's really toesy and like he's like, I feel like he's like constantly living in fight or flight.
I'm curious what you think.
Sawyer Robertson here. Like,
yeah, okay.
I just feel like he's constantly playing in a mindset of fight or flight. Like, that's how his feet look to me. That's how jittery he looks to me. Yeah. I'm seeing a lot of people like really show some Robertson hype, and he does move for pretty well for his size, but he also has like a Mason, like he's like a Mason Rudolph-ish kind of arm to me, where like, this dude is 6'5". Why does he have a B- arm? Like, you should be able to throw the ball with a little more velocity than that coming out of that frame. So I'm not there with the Sawyer Robertson hype, yeah, just because, again, I feel like he's just playing really toesy all the time. Like,
you know who his cousin is? Who he plays just like, too?
No.
Jarrett Stidham.
Oh, okay, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Right?
Like, I have anxiety kinda watching him. I just feel the anxiety in my heart. Like,
yeah, he's
like, dude, chill three out.
I have him in a day three right now. Yeah, I watch my two games on him. I get why people like him. It kind of looks like it's something. Like, it does, you know, as far as looks and like style or play style and everything. But for me, I like how you say the toesy stuff. There's just a lot of inconsistencies to me right now, especially, and I know Baylor is not world beaters or anything like that, but it is just like inconsistent is the word I just kind of kept coming back to. I'm keeping an eye on him. I have tabs on him and everything, but I thought kind of had that polished throwing style, had some okay movement stuff too for a good size guy, but it was just, I don't know, nothing wowed me. I don't know if that that's fair to say or anything, but it wasn't like, I was like, okay, I know what you are for now.
Yeah. And that's how I feel about Carson Beck as well. Like, I think we know what Carson Beck is, and I think it's just the wildest fit to throw him in an offense that Justin Herbert and Cam Ward, two like loose guns, have played in, and then be like, here's this guy with middling tools who very much wants to stay unstructured and like doesn't really want to do a whole lot of outside of what he's really asked to do. I think it's going to be a really odd fit. I mean, I think he's really smart for taking the check and going back to school and doing that.
Absolutely. Because his stock couldn't be any lower.
I also just know too much stuff. Yeah.
I think I just know too much
about like Carson Beck as like a worker and like how much he loves football and some things like that too, to like really like, you know, like, so good.
He's never
him,
done
man.
It for me. No, he's never really done it for me. Like, even last year, I kind of kept him lower. I was keeping him always behind, like even last, going into the fall last year, it was like, all right, guys that kind of like are like Riley Leonard and Carson Beck. It was like, all right, but it wasn't like, yeah, it was just like, yeah, I guess like these two, I guess these are like, but he, if you like, again, when you, how you win is what I always come back to. All right, Beck has to win in the NFL like Brock Purdy, you know, or, you know, Tua. You know, like guys that have to win from the pocket, you know, that's actually not fair because Purdy's a good creator. I will say that. So maybe not that, but in style, in pocket, I should say, he's not accurate enough. I actually think he's below average accuracy wise. I remember watching Bowers and doing a profile on him. And so I was like watching Beck too. And I was able to clip a whole bunch of catching range highlights for Bowers because the throws were so off, which was great for the Bowers tape. But also I was like, I'm remembering this. Like, if you're marketing yourself as a player to me, and even before I watch you, and I always use the term narratively scouting a guy. All right, how do you win? All right, I look at Carson Beck. All right, you're not very big. You're not very fast. Okay, well, you better be freaking Chad Pennington, like I brought with Nussmeier. You better be just pristine from the pocket. Do. If you're wild and you're making bad decisions, I'm out. You better be able to do that no matter the coaching. Like, it's on the quarterback to know this stuff too. It's not, you know, coaching does matter, but like, you should be able to overcome it. Like, I watched Drake May still making good decisions, and I know he was getting shit coaching. Yeah. So it's like, you know, like, it's these guys, the good ones figure it out regardless of who's around them. So like, that's the thing with him. I was like, yeah, I know the OC, I have issues with that OC. Don't get me wrong, but it's like, I just think that how you're supposed to win, you don't win that way. So yeah, I'm out. All right, out for now. Day three. I'm just so glad I don't have to talk about him as a top guy anymore. Like, I'm just like, yeah, no, this is you are slotted perfectly. You're day three. Perfect. Day three.
Yep. And you mentioned the Mendoza thing. Like, yeah, there are mistakes on his tape, but like, he corrects and like, you can see the process.
Never
like
see him again.
With Beck, it's like, oh, there's a robber, he's going to throw a pick. Oh, there's a robber, he's going to throw a pick. Oh, there's a robber, he's going to throw a pick. Over and over and over.
Or guys wide open, miss throw. guys yeah. wide open, miss throw. No, can't have that. It has to be automatic. That's why I love Mendoza. It's every ball is just, it's all, if it's work, if there's a throw there, he is making
and
it.
He'll and stand the down the spot. Barrel and make it too. We didn't even talk about that, but like the first throw of the Auburn game, he's getting tabletop.
Oh my God. Yes. And he throws the one on the sideline. Yeah, I know. How good is that tight end? That
Andries, dude, I'm a big Andries guy. He's transferred to Texas now. He's going to be in that Gunnar Helm role. He's going to get.
Oh, I know. I made sure to get the tweet out. So when he has a big game in October, I'm like, ah.
He's electric as ball in his hands, man.
He's good. I really liked him.
Outside of that, the rest of those wide receivers are like getting just drilled off their spots like
83
crazy.
83 stunk. Yep. I refuse to learn his name. 83 was, oh my God, a terrorist.
They're all just getting thrown off the spots. Like there's no spot throws on Mendoza's tapes just because none of the wide receivers can get to their spots.
Yeah. There's one we try to throw a go ball. He's getting, you just brought it up with Howard, like shortcut into a nine. Mm-hmm. Mendoza tries to do that and he looks and his receiver is 2 yards out of bounds because he just got shoved out of bounds. And you can see Mendoza go, well, shit. Yeah. He's like, all right. Well, and then that offense never, we talked about this offline, never gave him checkdowns. So he's like, all right, you got to get into creation mode. Like, I don't, because, but it was so cool because he was like, where's my checkdown? He was like, no, I don't, I know I don't have a checkdown. Okay.
His timer is so good. So good. Oh, yeah.
I'm glad we get to wrap this around with Mendoza.
Yeah. Last quick thing here. I've kept you pretty long, so I'm really appreciative.
No, this is fine. I got time.
We can always talk about guys that we can look at their tape, young guys, and say, like, oh, this is a leap candidate. I've got one in my mind who, was asked to play hero ball in the a complete program reconstruction. Mel Tucker burned Michigan State all the way to the studs on his way out the door. I trust Jonathan Smith coming in. Aiden Chiles, if you look at the box score, you say this guy stinks. Some really bozo-ish kind of plays too.
I know why you're playing a flag here, though.
I'm playing the flag on Aiden Chiles because there's so much in structure. The arm is good. Like I can see the process. Yes, but I think the bozo stuff, most of it is like he's trying to do too much because he kind of has to.
And that's fine. It's much better to rein in the wild horse than to like, hey, please push the ball.
And I think that's one thing that drives me crazy about summer scouting is people like, no, that guy sucks. But like, we're talking about a 19-year-old with 1 year of tape. And the whole point about summer scouting is trying to take that tape and say, what can that become next year? Correct. Not saying like, this is the same player he's going to be this way for 4 years. Yeah.
Yes.
And so like, I see what Aiden can do. He's climbing pockets well. He's creating well. Is he doing too much? For sure. But they kept Nick Marsh out of the portal somehow. So he's got his best wide receiver back too. That offensive line is just not very good. So I'm hoping they were able to build that up around him a little bit. But that's one guy I'm saying like, this guy's got, he's got it. You just got to kind of rein it in a little bit.
No, I'm glad you brought him up because I totally has the tools. And the other thing too, is I actually like that coaching staff a lot.
Oh yeah.
Like,
I'll trust Jonathan Smith with my life.
Yeah. So like if he can't do it there, it's one of those things. Like if he doesn't show it, it's like, all right, well, that it's one of those staffs I actually do, as I just talked about coaching and everything, overcoming coaching. Because I mean, they made DJU look like a workable quarterback and I mean, they're the only ones that did it. And outside of one Notre Dame game as freshmen. No, but I watched that offense too, is I actually know the tight end coach, Brian Wozniak. I played with him at Wisconsin and, but they run a lot of the stuff I ran in college too. It's very pro style. So I actually kind of like that as well. Like that's good for his development as well. So again, when you're getting dropped in that type of offense, the early returns are usually chaotic like that because they put a lot on the quarterback. Hey, we're making you be a real boy. Like we're making you be a quarterback, not just an athlete back there. So that's why I agree with you to stay bullish on him because I think that type of offense, it usually goes, okay, it's a slow climb and then it just goes do. Like the guys, it clicks for them. And then they start shortcutting reads and they start getting to the next steps. It just takes longer than, say, an old Clemson offense or a Briles offense or a Lane Kiffin offense or something that kind of spoon feeds the guys a little bit. So that's another thing is like why I think that's a good idea to stay bullish. Can I throw one out?
For sure. But talking about a 20-year-old as well. He's 20. Like same with Sellers. He's a young dude. So
eyes and tools and you show just enough baseline. Those are the guys you buy. Like you just don't give me another 6'2", 200-pound runaround guy. Like no, those guys don't make it. And every year they get hyped up. And then after a while, everyone goes, why isn't this guy getting looked at? It's like, well, he's 6'2", 200 and he runs around.
I just watched a game of one of those guys before I got on this air. And I hope it's not the guy you're about to say.
No,
who just like runs around it.
Give me the school.
Is it Arizona State?
Arizona State. Yes, that's exactly. So that's who I was thinking of when I just said that. Enough of the Heinekes. We have enough Heinekes.
He is a loose cannon, dude. Like for me, there's too much one and run. Yes. Where it's like, ah, shit. And then he's out of there. And he's just like, yes.
And he's not big. So like those guys can't like, I'd say can't make it. It's just, if you're like a runaround guy has to have size. Like it's just, and I know people want to talk about heart with quarterbacks and everything. It's just, it's real. Like I can point at numbers for dozens of years in the NFL and look at weights, and everyone makes fun of me and calls me a size queen and shit. And I'm just like, no,
it matters. It matters.
Like the NFL is a traits league, and it's not just O-line and pass rushers. It's quarterback too. Like it matters. So when I see a cruiserweight out there and he's just running around, and he's not just like, that's the opposite of him and Nussmeier. Nussmeier is trying to win from the pocket. That's his first thing. And it's creative. That's why I'm bullish on him. And this guy might be a better athlete, might be younger and everything. But the thing is, how he wins is running in schoolyard ball.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen in the NFL. Like Heinicke is the only one that's kind of sort of made it work. And he's a backup, you know? So like, that's when I see. Yeah. So I'm glad we're in agreement on this guy. He's fun to watch. Don't get me wrong. I get why people are really excited about him, but as an NFL prospect, it's a different discussion.
Not yet. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Darian Mensah, I transferred from Tulane. He's at Duke. I liked him, but then I watched him on tape and I kind of became cooler on him. His arm strength isn't that great.
He was like in my Discord channel. He is the epitome to me of like the gif of the girl trying White Claw for the first time, where she's like, trying White Claw. Yeah. For the first time to me.
Yeah. God, I watched him on TV and I was like, wow, this guy rocks. All right, this is cool. And then I watched him on tape and I was like, ooh, what was I thinking? No, but he has some nice things. Like he does, it throws a nice ball. You could see some good pocket movement.
Accurate for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, the arm strength is just average. Mm-hmm. And that kind of surprised me. It was one of those, I'm glad I watched it on All-22 because it was different than on TV. But he's a name I'm just keeping an eye on. I mean, guys signs for that big of money for a reason. Right. I wanted the Badgers to get on him, but they said he was out of their league. But the other guy, and this guy I was high on going into the last year. Then he had a horrible year because he faced injuries. He's in a terrible offense. And that's Byron Brown from USF. Okay. After last year, I'm not talking about this guy as a potential sneaky first rounder, but a guy I am keeping an eye on just in case, because size, athleticism, arm, I wouldn't say he has an elite arm. I think his deep ball dies on him a little bit, but he has a good arm and he can really drive it. But he was another super young guy. He started college as a freshman at 17. Like he is like a super young player. I think right now, he's 20. He'll turn 21 in September, even though he's a redshirt junior. So it's like he is just a very young player, but has all the tools that I really like. But plays in the Bryles offense, Tennessee offense, but at USF, but just the worst version of it you'll ever watch. He was thrown to a slot guy most of the time that was wearing like 26. And it's like, you're a 5'8 guy that was wearing 26. You're dead. Last year was a year from hell. Just battled all these injuries. They had all this stuff going on. But off his 2023 tape, he was exciting to me, especially in last year's wide open class. I was like, okay, I'm keeping a pin on this guy. Terrible year last year, but I want to see how he bounces back this year. He's so young. Again, not the best offense for development, but he has tools that are interesting. Maybe, again, day three guy to me right now, but it could ascend. Mm-hmm. So I just want to talk about him a little bit, Byron Brown.
Love it. One more thing I got to get you out of here. I just realized like we haven't talked about Nico Iamaliava at all. And I feel like for me, there's nothing to work with right now outside the tools. Obviously, but like he got outproduced by Joe Milton in an offense that should be pretty freaking easy.
Scared of his own shadow.
Yes.
Like he's terrified of pressure. Like eyes went down.
Yeah.
Any, not even guy coming through, just the threat of a blitz. Mm-hmm. Eyes went down. That's
nothing there right now. Nothing
nope.
There. Glad needs, we're there. We'll you see can what prove, Tino Sinceri can do.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
We'll see what Sinceri can work with there, but yeah.
We'll see. He has tools. I get the hype about him, but it's just like you watch him. It's like I understand why Tennessee was like, you want a raise? Nah. I don't know about that. Yeah, so he's I don't even consider him part of this class, to be honest, because it's not prospect tape to me yet. So we'll see how this year goes.
Perfect. All right, Nate. Well, that was awesome. I appreciate chopping that up with you there for a while. Again, Nate, Yahoo Sports. Any big projects in the work right now you want to pitch for yourself or no?
Actually finishing up the Mendoza article. I don't think it's coming out till next week. I still got some time on it, which is nice. But yeah, no, Arch Manning had the big board. We're just doing some random shows, Football 301. We're doing some rankings and news and just killing time until training camp. So but that's what we're doing. Yeah. This was a lot of fun though.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Nate, so much. I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
We'll have to have you back. But again,
absolutely.
Friend of the Draft Podcast. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Nate.
Yeah. Thank you.